Stamford, Connecticut to Tokyo, Japan, from the Florida Everglades to Mexico City, and wherever pile drivers, power bombs, and high spots are taking place.
I think business is about to pick up!
This is Pro Wrestling Talk without the PG filter. This is Calf Crusher Radio.
Oh my God!
Here are your hosts, Mike, Hammy, and King.
You know what that stock metal music means. It is time for an all-new Calf Crusher Radio, live on morelikeradio.com. Number to call, 908-854-4228. That's 908-854-4228. If you have the luxury of watching us on the video podcast, first off, thank you very much for checking us out on video. We put a lot of effort into our production value, and we gratefully accept your viewership. My name is Hammy. Joining me in studio is, as always, Michael, no longer hipster Punchy Falcone. And
what
joining
up?
Us from the Alexa Bliss Fan Club headquarters is none other than the King of Kings. No, not Triple H. The one and only Mr. John King from Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. What is going on, sir?
Hello, sir. No, I'm not in Wilkes-Barre anymore. Not in Wilkes-Barre.
Whatever, you're still in Hicksville, Pennsylvania. That's just still the same thing.
Northeast PA, yes.
Okay, so not New Jersey. Anyhow, welcome, everybody. Calf Crusher Radio. We are live on morelikeradio.com. Thank you so much for tuning in. We have a lot to talk about. Let's start off real quick with the biggest story of the week, and that is the first ever women's Money in the Bank ladder match ended up being won not by a woman.
That's technically not true, but okay.
Technically, the story is Carmella wins the first women's Money in the Bank ladder match.
Yep.
Thanks to interference from the pimple of my ass, the Long John Silvers of wrestlers, James Ellsworth. That little motherfucker climbs the ladder, retrieves a briefcase, no interference from anybody else. Ellsworth knocks Becky Lynch off the ladder, climbs up the ladder, retrieves a case, throws it down to Carmella, and then declares, as the referees were arguing, that Carmella wins the first ever women's Money in the Bank. And I have a huge problem with this, because I'm going to declare it right here, guys. Calf Crusher Radio, mark it. June 21st, 2017, the Women's Revolution is now dead. Thank you to James Ellsworth.
Hi, Hyperbole. How are you?
I am... I do not know what that word means. I really do not
Hyperbole
know.
Does?
I do not know what that word means, hey, but I will declare that the Women's Revolution is now dead. Thank you to James Ellsworth, because we had a historic... This was teased as the most historic event in SmackDown Live history, the first ever Women's Money in the Bank ladder match between very talented women's wrestlers out there, even Tamina Snuka. We're going to include her in this. Very talented women's wrestlers who all, at one point, deserve a main title run.
If I can interrupt you real quick, Tamina was booked really strong during the Money in the Bank
ladder
match.
Yes, she was.
She looked really good.
She looked great. Charlotte Flair, of course, looked great as well. Spot of the night of the entire pay-per-view of Money in the Bank was Charlotte Flair doing that corkscrew moonsault off the top rope to the outside, knocking down, I believe, Becky and Tamina.
The sparkle splash from Alexa Bliss. Just saying.
Of course, you have to show favoritism.
I'm just saying. That was the sparkle splash if there ever was one. Anyway, please continue with your rant, sir.
So, James Ellsworth, at the end of the match, it wasn't really that spot filled. We kind of suspected that the women would not have any big spot opportunities here, except for maybe like one or two big moves.
Yeah, I mean, like, I knew going into it, based on what happened with that Hell in a Cell match, that they were probably going to be told to cool it down with some of the spots, like they were with the Hell in a Cell match.
I don't know why. I think all the women deserve to have as many big spot moments as the guys do, but that's just me here being, you know, all for equality.
They had the one or two ladder spots where they got pushed off the ladder and into the ropes, which was, you know, that's kind of common fare now. But, I mean, I think that was okay. And you had one or two where, you know, they got smacked around with the ladders. I know Tamina did that a couple of times. So, I mean, it was, if we're judging it based on what the men's Money in the Bank spots have been, it may not have, you know, broke new ground. But it was a pretty decent ladder match. I'll go out there and say I thought I was entertained by the match itself.
I think it
might have been standard fare, but I was entertained by it.
I completely agree. I was entertained by the match. It wasn't a spot fest that I was hoping it would be, but we still got a couple great moments. The match was all the matches at Money in the Bank were really good, but let's focus on the biggest one here, which I believe was the Women's Money in the Bank ladder match. The end of the match saw the pimple on my ass, James Ellsworth, climb the ladder.
The pimple on my ass, trademark Hammy.
Yes, thank you, because Big E threw out a Bussos reference there. I want royalties, by the way. Anyhow.
Intellectual property. You got to make sure that you mark that shit, man.
Yeah, so hey, does that mean we get to like report that pay-per-view and then it gets shut down?
I'm going to report that to YouTube and get your video fucking flagged. How about that, WWE? That's my line.
Turnabout's fair play. Or heel turnabout's fair play.
But let's fair use this some more and talk about the Women's Money in the Bank ladder match. The end of the match saw James Ellsworth climb the ladder, retrieve the briefcase, and throw it down to Carmella. And my whole problem with this is this was built up as a historic moment in the women's division in WWE. This was booked as the first Women's Money in the Bank ladder match, and the victor came from a man climbing the ladder to retrieve the case. And yes, technically, Carmella was the first woman, arguably, if we're talking about James Ellsworth sex here. Carmella was the first person to talk that was the first woman to touch the Money in the Bank briefcase, thanks to James Ellsworth. And to me, this is now the second and hopefully last time James Ellsworth is involved with any main event storyline here, because let's not forget, guys, he interfered with the AJ Styles and Dean Ambrose WWE title program, and now he's entered in the Women's Money in the Bank program. And if WWE was going to go off with this finish here, to me, it should not have been the first Women's Money in the Bank match. This was supposed to be a historic moment for the women's division. This was supposed to be the women's moment. This was supposed to be simply historic. And I think James Ellsworth just simply ruined it. It wasn't even a false finish. I would gladly accept this as a false finish in the second Money in the Bank ladder match for the women. I would have gladly accepted this as the flat-out finish of any future Women's Money in the Bank ladder matches. But this was the first. And not even Daniel Bryan or Shane McMahon came out and said, nope. That is not how this match is going to end. Put that briefcase back up and restart it. I would have been happy with that.
Well, technically, Daniel Bryan did that yesterday.
Yeah, but again, and this goes to my other point, too, is there a lot of people saying, well, WWE's backtracking now. They had Daniel Bryan come out and say.
They absolutely are.
That's not a backtrack. That's what's played. Daniel Bryan put that tweet out like 5 minutes after it happened.
Yeah,
this isn't a backtrack. This is how it was scripted. This is how this has been planned. This has been the plan from the beginning, and I love it. I thought it was perfect. I thought it was absolutely perfect booking, perfect heel booking. And even if you don't like, oh well, they don't hate Carmella. They hate James Ellsworth. Well, especially after Carmella's promo on SmackDown, which by the way was probably the best promo she's ever given in her time in WWE. I mean, I think that goes a little equal ways now. I honestly don't understand. It's a scripted. It's not that it's a big, huge moment for women. It's a scripted TV show, guys. I hate to bring that up to everybody, but I mean, this is what we're at. And so I was watching Twitter during the whole show, which was entertaining as hell, and just seeing everybody flip out.
Of course, wrestling fans are never satisfied on Twitter.
You know, some of the big, like a couple of other podcasts and YouTube channels are, oh my God, this is, how dare they? This is disgusting. This is so despicable. I'm so disgusted. I'll never watch again. Well, first of all, yeah, you will watch again, because I mean, everybody who's always said, well, I'm never watching WWE again, always watches the next week. Although maybe the numbers kind of mean some King, people are going away.
King's not talking about the Mo Dronin show.
Asshole. Anyway, the point is like it was so crazy. And I don't know if anybody noticed, but when Ellsworth was climbing that ladder, the crowd went nuts.
You know, St. Louis is wrong.
hell?
St. Louis was wrong. And you know what? Normally...
No. That's the initial reaction to that happening from everybody watching, either there or even on TV, was, holy shit, they're going to do this. That, I mean, that's everybody's first reaction. And, I mean, that was the pure visual. Then, after it happened, everybody got the, well, this triggers me. Well, now this is, how dare they do this to the women? This is just, they had a man grab it and give it to the woman. Oh, my God. Listen, as you were saying, let's not assume James Ellsworth's gender right off the bat, first of all. Second of all, this is such a heel manager, heel valet kind of move. It really is. If they had Money in the Bank back in the 80s and early 90s, I'm guaranteeing you Sensational Sherry is going up to the top and getting it for whoever the hell she would happen to be managing at that time. But you know what I mean? Like, this is such like a scary Sherry move. This is such that heel valet kind of move. I mean, it's so perfect. It was so well done. It was so perfect. It got a hell of a lot of people talking, whether it was for the right reasons that people thought they should have been talking about it. Maybe not. But I personally, from when it first happened, I try to go by what my initial reaction is. My initial reaction was enjoyment. I thought it was hilarious. I thought it was fun. I thought it was a great way to build that kind of heat and anger. We all thought that Carmella was going to win anyway, and we all thought that Ellsworth was going to play a part in it. And I've heard other people say, oh, well, if he just didn't grab the case, like if he had lifted her up on the ladder and then she was able to grab it, I would have been fine with that. And I call bullshit on that, because everybody out there who is bitching about this and being such goddamn assholes and screaming all over the place would have been screaming the same goddamn shit if Ellsworth had lifted her up on the ladder and she grabbed it. Oh, she needed help from a man in the first ladder match. Oh, my God. It would have been the same bullshit that we're getting now, even if they had done that. So, basically, the only way WWE could have won is if they didn't have Ellsworth be like a heel valet, heel manager, and try to help his wrestler to win. Which, then what's the point of having him there? He's so far, I'm sorry.
I've been asking that question since day one, Kane, if I'm being honest with you.
Is entertaining. I'm sorry. Ellsworth is entertaining. He is fun. He adds so much to Carmella and to the show itself.
Duh!
He's just somebody, and that's the thing. He's just somebody that you just want to hate. They started out as somebody that was kind of like that plucky underdog kind of guy that was kind of good, but that wasn't going to go too far. So then they did this with him, and I'm sorry, it's been gold ever since. I have loved Ellsworth, especially with Carmelo. The both of them have helped each other out. And I know a couple of weeks ago, Mike was saying that the only problem he really had with Ellsworth was the fact that it seemed to be taking away from Carmella's ability to do her own promo work and own mic skills. But if anything, I think the point that I was trying to make is that maybe they're trying to build her up and get her better on the mic. On Tuesday, I think that point was proven, because on Tuesday, the promo she gave at the beginning of SmackDown was magnifique, man. It was perfect.
I will give you that. She has taken the ball with this controversial finish, regardless of what you or I may think about this. We're definitely going to disagree on how we feel about the finish of this match, but we cannot deny that Carmella took advantage of this opportunity and deliver a great promo on last night's SmackDown.
Now, I'm gonna interject, because I haven't stated my point on the match.
First, Triple H was interviewed by Sky Sports, and I have his comments here about this controversy. Here we go. Let's full screen this so you all can read this. I wasn't there, but it doesn't seem right, Triple H said before joking, although we are still trying to confirm that James Ellsworth is 100% a man. No, he is a pimple on my ass. He did grab the briefcase and hand it down to Carmella, he continued. We are entertainment, but the thing that I don't want to get passed up in this situation is that the women are being given the opportunity just like the men, and that is what this is really about. The entertainment component aside, to treat these women like the athletes that they are, and in some ways always have been, I think you're seeing that in the world. Triple H noted that the world is changing in regards to women in sports, and that WWE is following suit. I think the world is finally coming to terms that women are as great, sometimes better athletes than men, and deserve that same platform to showcase what they do as the men do. Most times, they knock it out of the park, and the world is coming to a position now where they appreciate that every bit as much as the men's competitions. We are at the front of that, and we want to give them the opportunity and let them shine in a way that they have never had before. This was, of course, from Wrestling Inc., this clip. What do you think of Triple H's words?
PC nonsense. It was a PC non-answer. It was just, you know, is Ellsworth a man? Who knows? By the way, women are great athletes, and they're wonderful people, and, you know, we all are seeing how great athletes they really are, and that's all, you know, good stuff. You know, it's good to see the women being athletes, and it's good to see that happen now on WWE, television now. That's all that was. It was just it was a nothing statement.
It really was. I would have been better with him saying they're the best wrestlers since Katie Vick. So here's my thing about the match. Like, I'm somewhere in the middle of what you and Hammy think about it, because on one hand, I do think in some way, like, Ellsworth winning it cheapens it a little bit, but I'm not going to do a knee-jerk reaction thinking that it's, like, division killing. Like, it's a heel thing. They tried it. Not everything's going to, like, please every single person. I do think Carmella had an excellent promo in response to that. I do think there were some good spots, considering it's the first time they've let the women do a Money in the Bank match. And I know, like, for some matches, gimmick matches like that, they kind of let them, like, walk on eggshells a little bit and don't let them go full speed with it. That's kind of the time where you experiment with something like that.
Let me pose this quick question to you, Mike.
All right.
With them kind of doing a redo next week on SmackDown with the Money in a Bank ladder match for the women.
Yes, Carmella was stripped of the Money in a Bank briefcase, and a rematch will happen next week.
With James Ellsworth banned from ringside, by the way.
So then I'll do a two-parter question here. One, do you think they'll take the reins off them and let them go maybe a little harder, even though it's not on a pay-per-view, it's not on the network, it's actually on TV. Do you think that they'll kind of say, all right, this is where you can go for it? And two, doesn't Carmella have to win again? Carmella has to have that briefcase.
She absolutely has to win again.
For the first question, part of me thinks they wouldn't let them go full bore with the redo. Because the division is so deep, there's not that many people in the division at this point, so you don't want to risk someone getting injured.
Okay.
But part of me also thinks they might let them go full bore to be like a ratings grabber, almost like not exactly to this degree, but almost like the Forrest Griffin Stephen Bonner match. And the Ultimate Fighter season 1 finale that was on free TV, and it, like, people were like, holy crap, look, this is happening on TV, watch it, and got a lot more eyes to the UFC. So there's the chance of that as well. As for the second question, absolutely Carmella is going to win. I think the way they're writing it, Carmella is going to kind of get the briefcase and then rub it in Daniel Bryan's face.
I'd like to see that. If you want to call what happened at Money in the Bank a misstep, as far as having Ellsworth grab it and give it to Carmella and all that kind of stuff, if they give, like, Becky Lynch or Tamina, if they give anybody else that briefcase at this point other than Carmella, I think that's a bigger misstep than what people are saying happened at Money in the Bank.
I'll agree with you on that.
Has to get that.
I think all three of us unanimously agree that Carmella has to win on next week's rematch.
The story becomes a little more convoluted if Carmella doesn't win.
It becomes convoluted, but then it also kind of adds to the, well, then I guess Carmella couldn't win without a man, you know, and then it turns into all that. It'll just be more of that kind of shit rolls downhill. it'll just get worse and worse and worse and worse.
You know, King, you're absolutely right about that, because if she loses, that's exactly the message that it sends to everybody, especially the little girls that were watching this match. Carmella cannot win this match without a man present. That, to me, now that I think about it, that message is far more damaging than what happened at Money in the Bank on Sunday.
Let's be honest, we'll probably see an appearance from James Ellsworth's sister, Jamina Ellsworth.
but to me,
here's the one thing. They have. I think WWE has learned their lesson as far as like the whole Santina Marella thing. You know, like, let's just start dressing up people. Yeah,
I think. I disagree, because I think that this incident on what happened at Money in the Bank on Sunday is just it's on par with Santina Marella at WrestleMania 25. I sincerely believe this.
And not see it. 25 years of WWE WrestleMania wrestling, and your Miss WrestleMania is a dude. I think that's more highly insulting than what happened on Sunday. It was a thing for equality. I'm sorry. I think that was equality. I think that's you have the male valet, which, first of all, when have we ever seen a male valet before?
That is a fair point.
You have that kind of gender role reversal there, and you have the valet doing heel shit to get to cheat to get their wrestler over, which is what heel valets do. I mean, to me, like I said, and maybe I'm looking at it just in that kind of wrestling vacuum, and I'm not seeing the bigger social picture. But I think even if you take the social picture in mind with this particular incident, I think you have so much here to work with. You have the fact that you have the gender role reversal. You have here that it's just, you know, this shouldn't be a case of, well, how dare they have the man touch it, or how dare the, looking at it, this is a great wrestling program in my mind. I thought it was just, it was well done. It was well executed. And you have people who are just like, well, this was the first, now forever, in the history of forever, all you're going to see is James Ellsworth grabbing that case, which I will say, bullshit. The first thing you're going to see is Carmella holding up the case, just like you see with every other single video montage that they do of every other Money in the Bank thing. Whenever you see it, every now and then you'll see, like, they'll show the guy going up the ladder and grabbing it. But for the most part, you just see the guy holding up the briefcase. Oh, I got the briefcase. Or, you know, hey, I got the briefcase. That's all they're going to show from Carmella. So for 5 years from now, 10 years from now, yeah, you might remember that James Ellsworth went up there and grabbed it. But every image, everything you're going to think of is Carmella holding up that case. Unless they fuck it up on Tuesday, which we can always hope that they don't. But, I mean, from my perspective, I'll put it this way. I can understand how feminists and people of that who have that kind of outlook and mindset can feel the way they did about the pay-per-view. I get it. I understand where they're coming from. I just want to be able to provide that counter-argument of how, and I guess I'm a man, so I'm mansplaining. I'm sorry. But I think there is a reasonable and logical explanation as to the booking decision, how it plays out in the storyline, everything like that. I know, how dare, it doesn't matter if there's a storyline to it. This was a big, important moment. It's a wrestling pay-per-view, guys. Pump your brakes a little bit. All right? You know what I mean? Yeah, this hasn't killed the women's revolution. And honestly, I think the women's revolution has gotten to a point. I think the only thing left to really do is to have like the women main event WrestleMania. Will that ever happen? We'll see if there's a compelling enough storyline to push it that far. But I think eventually that will happen. But I think that's the last real hurdle for the women there. And let's face facts: CM Punk never main evented a WrestleMania.
Yeah.
So. I mean,
a lot of people like never main event the WrestleMania.
And he was, and he also was a vagina with his dismissal too. But look, Kane, you made a very valid point. Honestly, looking at your argument, a lot of me agrees with you. I completely understand the storyline purpose of the way that they booked this. I really, truly do. But take a look at where we were this time about a year ago. A year ago, We had Sasha Banks and Charlotte Flair in the rivalry of the year, no questions asked. And they had the historic first time women main evented a major pay-per-view and first women's Hell in a Cell match. And they let that match go on the way it was supposed to. There was a clean finish where a woman entered and exited victoriously.
Okay.
You go to this, and I think the women's revolution has just devolved to the point where it's become almost a, it's become almost comedic at this point, in my opinion. And I could be totally wrong, and this could just be my personal disdain for James Ellsworth talking here. But I think James Ellsworth involved with this match and the way that he did it, I think it's just because this was the first official Women's Money in the Bank ladder match that I'm this anti-booking of this decision on this part. Because I looked at Twitter when this match happened, and there was not one positive response from this.
King, you are
the only person that I've talked to or have seen that has publicly said that they support this booking decision.
Go find you more. Matthew from Botchamania actually agrees with me. So I'm in good company, damn it. Now, the guys from WCPW aren't, but then again, they I think we all kind of know they wouldn't be. But I mean, I have some Twitter backup. I have some legitimate.
You may be right. You may be wrong, but you may be right. But I will say this. I will say this. This match, it doesn't. If you wanted to go down a heel route, James Ellsworth didn't steal anything from anybody. He knocked down Becky Lynch, and he was alone to climb the cage. He didn't steal a moment. Where, and let's transition to the men's Money in the Bank ladder match.
Well, before we do that, I do want to give you guys a little food for thought, the two things involving the women's division. One that can support the thing of saying that the women's division is going to take a like downward swing. And one that will support that it's not and that it's only got more to go. We've had the first couple participants of the Mae Young Classic announced. Sarah Logan of NXT, which Hammy saw her wrestle last week. And Lacey Evans, Lucha star Princesa Shughit, who's been wrestling for like 20 years, is going to be in there.
She also has like 20 different names. I noticed that. I went to go look her up the other day when you had mentioned that.
Yeah.
She has like 7 different names.
Yeah. Also, we have, let's see what's on this one. Former, current Progress Women's Champion and Toni Storm is going to be in it. So that's continuing WWE's partnership with Progress there. Also, a couple people who are kind of rumored for that. Abby Laith, formerly Kimberly in the indie circuit.
Abby Laith, the SmackDown.
And
I did that joke in Messenger. I was going to do it on a show, goddammit.
I figured. But we're also getting the rumor that Shayna Baszler, former UFC women's fighter, for those who paid attention to it, she's also the one who kind of helped Nikki Bella with her rehab and coming up with new moves to use that don't put as much strain on her neck. She actually might be involved in the tournament as well. That's on the positive side. On the negative side, there's rumors that what they're going to do as a storyline thing with Bayley is that it's going to be revealed that she's in character, never been kissed.
Oh, God.
No.
Oh, God. Oh God. No. Oh. No. No. No.
And that her match at SummerSlam will end with her first kiss.
You know what, then? I volunteer as tribute, then. I will volunteer to give Bayley her first kiss. The bar will be set very, very low, but there's only up from there.
Well, okay. Unfortunately for you, Hammy, once again, you'll be losing out to a guy who has better hair and a lot more tattoos.
God damn it. That's what always happens.
The rumored first kiss for Bayley will be Corey Graves.
Son of a bitch. It's always well-dressed, tattooed with amazing hair men that steal the girls from me.
Don't forget the ones who have, the ones that have like that like asshole-y charm?
Of course. Nice guys finish last. I'm proof of that.
Relax, Green Day.
I am gonna jump in on this, and I'm going to say, listen, if WWE wants to be progressive, if they want to kind of jump in on this and kind of maybe get some more goodwill from the SJW community after the Money in the Bank situation, you should have Bayley's first kiss be a girl. Like, legitimately, I'm not even screwing around here, guys. Like, I know you were all kind of silent there looking at me like, seriously, have Bailey's first kiss be a girl. Be a woman. I think that'll work.
Now, it might kill Vince.
Like Kane throws Alexa Bliss's name into the mix in 3, 2, 1.
He already did.
Just missed it.
He already did 34 minutes into the show. The King Perv watch.
Still, tell me, I think that would be, because listen, WWE already said that they want to try to start mixing some more same-sex, you know, kind of same-gender kind of storylines into their storylines to be more progressive and be all that. They've already put that out there. Why not? Have it a good first start right there. Other than trying to do like, you know, Billy and Chuck again. You know, and that you kind of offensive way of doing it. You know, why not just good to me. You know, something like this? I think that would be an actual decent way to maybe throw that into a storyline mix. However, you want to see it. You know, whether you want to see it as, you know, a lesbian kiss or maybe Bailey, you know, she's a confused child. Which, first of all, I hate the whole Bailey confused child gimmick to begin with.
Yeah. Kane is getting his booking decisions from Pornhub.com.
RedTube.
RedTube. Oh, there you go. That's at least a little virus free here. But I'll throw in one more ingredient to this James Ellsworth thing here. The day after the pay-per-view, I was really angry with Ellsworth, and I still am just because I cannot stand him. But I will give credit where credit is due, and mark this, June 21st, 2017, I'm going to give credit to James Ellsworth for something. Because his responses to the competitors in the Women's Money in the Bank ladder matches on Twitter were hilarious. And I have one right here. Natalia tweeted, "I grew up in this business. I gave my life to this business. I'm not letting some no-chin freak take my Money in the Bank opportunity away." And Ellsworth responds with, "Nobody likes you, Natalia. Not even your stupid cats. Hashtag duh." I could not stop laughing at this tweet. And you know what? God damn it, you're making me do this? I'm going to follow James Ellsworth now because of that.
Oh!
I'm following James Ellsworth because of that tweet.
God, I hope he sees all the pimple on my ass tweets you've made about him.
You know what? His perfect response to me, "You're a fat man from New Jersey, and I'm touring with the WWE. Roasted me.
Hashtag duh."
That's all he's got to do.
New Jersey just has the garbage from Staten Island, and I'm with the Princess of Staten Island. Hashtag duh.
And then, but he's from Baltimore, so duh. Hashtag duh.
And just like the Women's Money in the Bank ladder match, that is also garbage. But let's transition to the Men's Money in the Bank ladder match.
Hold on, before we do.
They're transitioning from women to men.
He's from Baltimore, and like in baseball, someone from Baltimore is playing second fiddle.
And 90% of the city's total trash anyway. So let's transition to the Men's Money in the Bank ladder match here.
Fired. Shots fired.
Where I personally believe that Ellsworth did not steal a moment in a true heel fashion, Baron Corbin absolutely did. Because, guys, we were watching this Money in the Bank ladder match. And first off, great match.
Yeah.
It was a great ladder match. It was a great main event. The matches themselves over the night, I mean, the finishes were a little wacky, but the matches themselves were really good. We'll talk about the tag team match in a second, which, in my opinion, was match of the night. But let's go to the main event for Money in the Bank this past Sunday. Baron Corbin is your Mr. Money in the Bank, which all of us got right. I think all of us got most of the predictions right.
It was
right.
So obvious that
I
he
think
was.
Most of the people watching or anybody who like made predictions about this that weren't, you know, like marks for other wrestlers, I think anybody who looked at this objectively pretty much pegged the outcome of every single match.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Like we're saying, it was kind of obvious through the whole night.
They were, and the...
They might as well put the tagline, "By the way, Baron Corbin's winning the Money in the Bank briefcase."
But look, it's not so much the predictability, it's how he won it. Because before Baron Corbin stole the moment he stole was arguably the markout moment of the year so far for us, which was AJ Styles and Nakamura giving us that epic stare and eventual fisticuffs were thrown. That is your WrestleMania main event. That has to close WrestleMania or SummerSlam. That is the match to make.
I mean, let's be honest. We know it's going to close WrestleMania.
It has to.
We know that match is not going to close WrestleMania. We know
It's definitely Reigns versus Lesnar.
Not going to,
unfortunately,
close at WrestleMania.
But AJ Styles versus Nakamura, that is the match. That is the end all be all. That is the only thing I give a shit about right now, aside from Lesnar and Samoa Joe. That match was teased brilliantly. AJ Styles is 40 years old, guys, and he is doing things in that match that I'm like, dude, why are you still doing this?
Can I be honest? His time in TNA probably extended his shelf life as a wrestler.
It absolutely did.
With, like, the easy taping schedule and the fact that he was exclusive for a while and they didn't really do tours, like, that extended his shelf life as a wrestler.
But am I crazy here for saying that Styles and Nakamura segment in the Money in the Bank ladder match was arguably Marquette Moment of the Year so far for 2017?
So far, yeah.
I was like, oh, yes, oh, yes, oh, yes.
They built it really well too. Like they kind of
it was brilliant. It was brilliant booking. It was brilliant booking all around. They put the ladder aside so they can throw fists and wrestle in the ring. They didn't care about the Money in the Bank contract. They just went at it, and it was that was perfect booking. And then Baron Corbin, in true heel fashion, came and stole the moment from us. He was brilliantly booked to win that Money in a Bank ladder match. That was so picture-perfect booking that I want to commend Baron Corbin for executing it and WWE for booking it, because that is how you generate real heel heat. That is how you get the crowd to unanimously hate you, because you look at that crowd, and I guarantee if you survey every person that was watching Money in a Bank, they will all say Styles and Nakamura was just making them happy as fans. And then Baron Corbin comes in and just takes it and says, fuck you guys, I'm getting this Money in a Bank contract, and just takes it from us. I am so happy that SmackDown Live has a true, legit heel on their roster right now. And look, we can all agree or disagree on how we feel about Kevin Owens, but Kevin Owens is nowhere near as universally hated as a heel like Baron Corbin is right now. Kevin Owens is a smart heel.
He's a better heel.
He does great heel things. He does great heel tactics, but everyone still cheers for him. I think people unanimously will boo Baron Corbin more than they would boo Kevin Owens.
Honestly, between the New Face of America stuff and the breaking up him and Jericho, some of that, like, even some of that smart appreciation turned into booze.
I don't know, man. That he still gets cheered wherever his music pops.
That only happened with, honestly, immediately after that Festival of Friendship Jericho breakup that he did. It was until like right after Backlash, when they faced him again and all that kind of stuff. Ever since he's gotten done this Face of America run, it's kind of gone back to the, he's a heel, but he's such a great heel. He's so evil, man. I love him. He's so great. Whereas with Baron, it is, I hate that balding son of a bitch. He has robbed me of my internet darling Nakamura, AJ Styles, New Japan rematch. I only had a moment of it. I couldn't even get a massive
precisely
erection.
By the way,
King will knock Smarks for acting that way, but whenever Alexa Bliss loses a televised match,
I lose my mind.
He loses shit the same. You can replace,
or the Devils change their jersey colors.
You can replace Baron.
No, do not even start on that. Ruin their jersey. That's complete another horseshit. Adidas can go eat an ass.
Look, he's triggered so much. Google, like the Google Hangout screen froze. How to trigger King 101? Talk about the New Jersey Devils uniform designs.
God, you IHC smark. Relax.
Yeah, hockey smark.
I internet hockey community smart. I am.
Wow. I mean, you always have to complain about everything.
Yes. Yes. It's something changed. How dare they? I'm going to go on a message board and voice my displeasure.
You did post several times on Facebook about this.
I made images, damn it. I made memes.
You know what, though? I understand because I, as an audio engineer, if I hear like a band that didn't record with me, record with someone else, and their the mix doesn't sound nearly as good as what I can do, I get very angry as well. So you know what? I understand you, Kane. I understand where you're coming from as a graphic designer. When you freak out about logos and designs of clothing.
Let's put things into perspective, too, as far as like King calling out Smarks for complaining. King.
Yes.
A man whose social media feed is equal parts professional complainer and moving black cloud is telling you guys to calm the fuck down.
Yeah, but let's put that into perspective here.
That's it. That's not so much an indictment on me. That's an indictment on the wrestling community as a whole. You know, I'm just saying.
If My Chemical Romance was sponsored by Jägermeister, you get King.
Yeah.
And he's telling you all to chill out.
No, if My Chemical Romance...
I was going to fight that. I was going to say no, and then I was like, I don't know. All of a sudden, the Welcome to the Black Parade starts playing. And I'm just like, oh, well, maybe.
If you put Metallica guitars to Welcome to the Black Parade and sponsored by Jägermeister, that's King's ideal album.
With Alexa Bliss as their model.
Oh, dude, could you imagine Alexa Bliss with like the dark goth hair, or just like the whole emo getup? Yeah,
King, why is your camera suddenly pointing upward?
Now all of King's sex pictures of Alexa Bliss will have like colored in hair.
Oh, dude, I'm going to Photoshop right after this. Who are you kidding?
Yep, that'll be the new shirt.
Sanitarium. My God, what have we devolved to?
But no, like, and it, like King embodies a movement in wrestling on the internet that is like, I don't know how I feel about it, which is like the anti-smark movement, which is I'm going to shit on something that I know I like because those people like it.
Honestly, I'll say this, and I will often, and maybe this makes me an asshole, I don't know, but I will often play devil's advocate with a lot of things. Like once I start noticing a bunch of people either really liking or really hating, like really sharing strong opinions, like Hammy does with his hyperbole that James Ellsworth has killed the women's revolution. I will often try to then go to the other side, no matter how I feel about something. I will always try to provide that counter argument as to, well, you're kind of losing your goddamn mind. Let's take a look at this logically. You know what
you
I mean?
You know what? You're absolutely right.
Listen, I've never known Hammy to just not think rationally about
something.
Are
you kidding me? Rational's my middle name.
You are the king of hot takes. I'm just going to put that out there.
I certainly am.
Ham LaGreco roll.
You know what is? You know what's
but,
not?
And one thing I wanted to point out, too, about the Nakamura-AJ match for WrestleMania. Let's be honest. Even if it's as good as the Wrestle Kingdom match, Dave Meltzer will still subtract a star because it's not in Japan.
It's WWE. Just looking at it. It was a good match. It was a good match. They did some of the good spots, but I mean, it's stuff I've seen. It's stuff I've seen over in New Japan. So it's just like when it's a rehash. That's gonna take some of the stars.
So WWE, if you want Dave Meltzer's match of the year, just switch the venue from the Superdome to the Tokyo Dome, yeah. And there you go. Then Meltzer will praise the pay-per-view.
Well, if they went to the Tokyo Dome, I mean, it would have been a better setting if they went to the Saitama Super Arena with the MMA history and...
Is Punchy Zane booking WrestleMania now?
Here's what I would do, though. It's like, we're in New Orleans, so we should definitely have, like, the Florida Door on there, you know, like, in the set as the thing, like, instead of a roller coaster like last year. And then I say, like, SmackDown should get the main event this time because last year Raw got the main event.
I love... and hate your Sami Zayn impression. I just love and hate it. Okay, so the other matches I want to talk about from Money in the Bank are my personal match of the night, which was the tag team match, which saw the Usos defeat the New Day.
You forgot.
I'm sorry, no. Usos lost and retained the titles via countout. Sorry, correction.
You also, like, you forgot the new name for the Usos, as said by the fashion police.
Oh, that's right.
The Uggos.
No, I'm going to still call them.
So that's their official name now. Big E came up with that all by himself, by the way.
He did not. He did not.
Good I job, did. Geeky, with that kind of just off the top of his head with the whole Bussos thing. I like that.
Punchy said it as a joke once, and then I took it and ran with it. That is our joke. That is our line. The Bussos is our line.
God damn it. This is our fish sticks joke, and Biggie is our Carlos Mencia.
Yes. 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 That is perfect.
Carlos Mencia. I don't know what you guys are talking about. I've never heard Bussos until I heard Big E say it at Money in the Bank. That
God
was
damn it.
Which, by the way,
very clever of him. Very
which,
good.
By the way, makes me Jimmy and Hammy Cartman.
Yes! I certainly have the temper of Cartman. And the body. And the questionable racism, but that's not what's important right
questionable.
Now. All right. So let's talk about that tag team match. That is my personal match of the night.
That was a fun match.
I thought the New Day and the Bussos have an incredible chemistry in the ring. A lot of near falls, a lot of close finishes. And then, like the Women's Money in the Bank ladder match, that finish was just...
Yeah, those were weird finish.
It wasn't good. It wasn't bad. It was just... That's my general thought of Money in the Bank was just... I'm on the fence about the whole thing. On one hand, I could be like, okay, let's think logically. On one side, they get themselves counted out. That continues the rivalry. We're going to see another match. We're going to see more program between the two. And that continues the feud. It keeps both teams relevant. I like that. But on the other point, it's like, okay, it's a pay-per-view. You're supposed to have a finish to something here most of the time. They have an amazing match. That match should have ended with some form of a decisive win for one of the teams instead of just the Bussos walking out of the ring, just saying nah, fuck this, we're done.
They were jailbreaking from the Uso Penitentiary.
Here's first of all, boo.
So.
But
when I say boo, you say so. Boo.
So.
Boo.
So.
I'm on top.
That ending was
dumb.
Probably not the right call, especially if you're going to do what you did with the Women's Money in the Bank. To have that finish, then follow that.
That ending, it was
so dumb. That's where I think the booking decision came in as misguided. And wrong. I think there were a couple of bad booking decisions about where match placements were. But if you're going to do that finish, you place that match a little later down the card. And I, again, reading from Twitter, reading gauging people's reaction, I get that a lot of people had the same reaction that Hammy did, which is there were some great moments and there were great spots, but some of the finishes kind of took away, so they kind of left feeling meh about the whole thing. I kind of the way I try to judge how I feel about a wrestling show, and maybe this is why I always hate Joe Cronin all the time and all the other people who go out there and just like, oh my God, this sucks all the time. Everything is terrible. Everything was better back in the Attitude Era. There's all we need.
Then stop watching. First off, I'm sorry to interrupt you. I know you're about to make a really good point that I might agree with, King, but to these people who all they do is endlessly complain about WWE product. It's 2017. There are tons of other products out there for you to watch. You have Ring of Honor. You have New Japan. You have Lucha Underground still. You still have a lot of independent circuits out there. You still have tons of options. You have One Culture. You have tons of options to watch instead of just WWE. So, I mean, there's really no excuse anymore to just endlessly bitch about the WWE product.
And so many avenues to watch them. You have Fight TV. You have different apps now where you can actually get and watch these for the same price that you would pay for, or maybe even a little bit more, but not much, than you would pay for WWE Network. So if you don't like the WWE product, like I can, and listen, I get that. I'm not saying you have to like it. Different people have different tastes. And the WWE product is not for everyone. But if you're going to base, like what you do, if you're going to base your podcast, your YouTube channel, whatever it is, on WWE wrestling and do nothing but shit on it and find nothing redeeming about the product every week after week, every pay-per-view, every show, nothing is entertaining, everything is garbage, everything is bad, and it's just constantly suck, 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 negative, 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 then at some point it becomes, you know, if I'm watching
your Facebook feed.
Get the, no, because here's no. When it comes to wrestling, I'm very fair minded.
You are.
Even
unlike Fox News, you are fair and balanced.
You know, when it comes to hockey, no. I mean, obviously the Rangers suck and always will suck. But the Devil's jersey is fucking atrocious. But back to my point.
I think it's fantastic.
I'm going to punch you.
I think whoever designed the logo and the new Devil's jersey should get a raise, actually.
See, no, here's the thing. They didn't change the logo. So at least they knew they were smart enough not to do that. But that jersey is just...
I mean, they moved the lines a couple of inches. How fucking dare
and
they?
And they removed the ham stripes. They made the sleeve stripes like comically clown huge. It looks like a Kmart like youth knockoff jersey.
You're welcome for that one, by the way.
Hear it. I don't want to hear it. Back to my actual wrestling point. Shut the hell up.
All right. No, I'll see you. All right.
King. My point is how I try to judge a wrestling show, a wrestling pay-per-view, anything that I watch is, you know, even despite some of the finishes, despite things that happened, did I overall enjoy the show? Did I find myself, you know, watching the matches, invested into the stories, invested into the performance and the program itself? With Money in the Bank, I found myself invested in what they were doing. It grabbed my attention. It grabbed you right off the bat with the Women's Money in the Bank. Whether you loved it or hated it, that grabbed your attention. Now, you know, some people might have been like, well, screw this. I'm not watching this now because, you know, misogyny and whatever. You know, that's, I think, a gamble you take with a booking decision like that. But, like, even if you're still watching it, like, the matches themselves were very good. I think the only match that really was kind of like ho-hum for me for the whole pay-per-view was Fashion Police and Ascension. I was hoping maybe this is a way that they kind of maybe push Ascension back into maybe the tag division, since the tag team division kind of seems to be a little, you know, flimsy at the moment. But no, of course not. That didn't happen.
Well, so I mean, but you also can't kill the momentum of Breezango.
No, but so
it's amazing that we're saying that sentence now.
I know. Like, that they've gotten themselves over. The Ascension winning that would have, like, hurt what, like, those who have worked for as well. So it was a bad spot for both teams.
It is amazing we're seeing that now, but let's not forget 3 years ago what we thought about New Day. And look at where they are now as probably the most over tag team since,
I think,
Legion of Doom, maybe?
Yeah, I think Breezango can get there, too.
You know, and again, it's kind of like when WWE writers were like, well, this is kind of done. See what you guys can do with it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've kind of learned when you get out of some of the wrestlers' way and let them be creative,
yep,
they can be creative. And New Day has proven that. And I think we're seeing now with Tyler Breeze and Fandango, we're seeing that as well, where it's kind of like, okay, these guys, you know, they have an idea of, you know, they were just kind of thrown together because they did the whole smarmy, good-looking person thing. And they themselves have taken it and brought something fun and creative to it. So,
and something that's going to probably move a lot of shirts because they have a shirt now.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But that's my whole thing. My whole thing is just that, you know, while a lot of people got, you know, gave the show bad reviews and said it was like a C show or a D-minus show because of how the women's match was, that finish to the Uso New Day match was that, and, you know, the other, you know, that, you know, it was finish this and finish that and everything like that. I look at it as from just an overall enjoyment of the show. Whether I can question the way the finish was booked or where the matches were booked, that's neither here nor there. Did I enjoy the show? I enjoyed Money to the Bank, or Money in the Bank. Sorry, it was really, really, it was good. The one thing I will say, going back to the whole booking decision, was the one thing I didn't like was having the Money in the Bank match last and having the WWE Championship match before that. I think that killed a lot of the, well, is somebody going to cash in like last year with Dean Ambrose, you know, on the same night, or is that something that can, you know, I think that's always something you kind of want to keep alive during these kind of pay-per-views. And also, they had Jinder come out first. This is one time where I will agree wholeheartedly with Plumpy over from WhatCulture.com, where the champion should always come out last.
Thank you. I would. You know what? And that's a perfect transition, because let's talk about Orton versus Jinder for a second.
Breaking.
So,
for those who've been paying attention, Jim Cornette and Vince Russo have been going back and forth ever since the table for three.
In other news, water is wet.
Yeah. So it's gotten one step further. Jim Cornette posted a picture on Twitter. Vince Russo has issued a restraining order on Jim Cornette.
What? What? Where is this? On his Twitter account?
Yeah.
Jumping over to Twitter right now.
So, it
just
shows
the three fat guys just go on the internet right now. Sorry, everybody.
But essentially, he's saying that
Here's a tweet. Golly, Voldemort just filed an emergency protective order on me. I can't hang out with him anymore. My God. Here it is. Jesus Christ.
That is perfect.
Front page on front on Jim Cornette's Twitter account. My Lord.
Oh, Vince God.
Russo. Did he write that? Vince Russo. I hope that's like maybe like a court person.
I think it's a court person. That. Yeah.
I would make fun of his handwriting, but my handwriting is that of a mentally disabled 5-year-old. But. Petition for an order for protection and request for a hearing filed by person seeking protection.
The thing checked off is I'm a victim of stalking.
I've been a victim of stalking.
My holy shit.
I am or have been a victim of stalking.
Right there, front and center, I am or have been a victim of stalking.
Yeah. Who is Cornette stalking on anyway? That fat ass isn't stalking anybody. He's as loud as he is. You could give him Jimmy Hart's megaphone, and he couldn't be louder about his Vince Russo hatred than he already is, and that he doesn't want to be anywhere near him unless it's to choke him to death.
You know what? just for this, I'm following Jim Cornette now.
You haven't been?
I have not been following Jim Cornette. And you know what? I should unfollow myself for not following Jim Cornette.
As Jim Cornette would say, yes, you should, motherfucker. Which, by the way, now that Vince Russo has been mentioned, and we mentioned the Attitude Era earlier with people bitching about
it. I'm sorry, you've interrupted me a few times tonight, Mike. I'm going to interrupt you here once. Take a look at a couple of tweets that Jim has retweeted. First from Bruce Pritchard, absolutely, positively spineless, hilarious, unbelievable, hashtag who is the mark, and that's all I have to say. Good night. But then there's this guy, John at Drops in the River. Could his wife call Russo a sex offender? I feel like sex with him is offensive to all five senses. Jim Cornette retweets that. I'm sorry. Continue, my friend.
Okay, this reminds me. Hot take. I feel like the people who complain that it's not as good as the Attitude Era are forgetting that the Vince Russo section of the Attitude Era, which was kind of like where it started to boom, doesn't have the depth of quality that everyone thinks it does. You had like Austin, you had DX, you had The Rock, and Mick Foley, and The Undertaker. So those five people. Segments involving everybody else, though, were a colossal clusterfuck.
That is a hot take.
Think about it, though.
Agree, though, and I've been saying that for years, brother, so preach on that.
Like, yeah, outside, like, and it's one of those things where those five people are people that you could not fuck up with. I don't care how bad the writing is, those five, like, names and, well, one group that I mentioned are like lightning in a bottle. It's one of those situations of talent making bad writing work. But if you look at the rest of Russo's booking in WWE, shit show.
Man, that is a hot take, my friend.
But I agree. I've always kind of agreed with that. And the fact of the matter is, I think a lot of that is that nostalgia factor. Like, people seem to forget the absolute drizzling shit parts. that were
Beaver Cleavage,
the Attitude Era, you know, and a lot of things that that happened there. I mean, and listen, if you want to talk about, you know, like, you know, women's rights and women's, you know, how they've come so far and everything like that, everybody always goes back to Trish and Lita and everything like that. Trish had to get big ass fake titties to get noticed. Kind of the same with Lita, who had her fucking thong hanging out of her ass the whole time. It, I mean, everybody was still sexualized then.
Yeah.
It wasn't, you know, they were still only given 5 to 7 minutes, if that.
You raise a very fair point with, because because when I tried to show my girlfriend is a self-admitted self-admitted progressive feminist, and I'm trying to get her into wrestling, and she is a big fan of the women's revolution. And I'm saying, oh, look, this all started with Trish and Lita. I mean, this whole thing stemmed from those two because they tore the house down with every match that they were in. And I show her the TLC 2 match. Lita comes out with her thong hanging out and then smacks Spike Dudley with a chair and takes her shirt off. And my girlfriend just goes from, oh, enjoying a match, to, oh, God. She, like, her facial expression was me whenever James Ellsworth comes on the screen. And it was just absolutely disgusted. Like, she's like, if she's that good of a wrestler, she doesn't need to show her body. She just goes in the ring and wrestles. Like, why is she doing this? I'm like, because Attitude Era.
But to that extent, too, I mean, most male wrestlers wear, you know, underwear and or, you know, cut and muscular and oiled up. And
oh, I'm not saying women can't objectify the wrestlers, because she has no problem objectifying Roman Reigns and admitting that she would absolutely cheat on me with him in a heartbeat. But, you know, I guess in that point, it was a lot more of a Jerry Springer type of environment where women were recognized for their looks far beyond their in-ring ability, whereas now we recognize them for their in-ring ability along with their looks.
Right. Also, like we mentioned earlier, the women who actually could wrestle that had to get like implants because of the policy there, basically, like they were pretty much like making them do it or suggesting they do it so they can get pushed. And for someone like Alita, that kind of fucked up her in-ring style for a little bit, because that added weight to her while she was doing like the moonsaults and shit.
And it's like legit, like you'd sit there and say like, oh man, that's no, that's legitimate. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's kind of goofy. But I mean, that's the thing. Could you imagine like a Becky Lynch or a Naomi or, oh God, I know he's going to say it again, but like an Alexa Bliss in the Attitude Era?
What?
And what Jerry Lawler would say and how that
puppies
would be.
Puppies!
You know, oh my God, look at, man, I wouldn't mind getting a rear view from her. Woo-hoo-wee-hoo. You know, it's like, it really was.
He would have said that.
Not that progressive, you know what I mean? So as much as everybody always, oh man, I wish the Attitude Era was back. Seriously, I mean, you have the WWE Network now. Go back and watch some of those episodes.
They're
some
all on the network.
Also,
absolute drizzling shit.
Don't watch the parts involving the main stars, Austin, Rock.
It's the whole show.
The whole entire show.
The whole effing show.
Watch the Mark Henry stuff.
Oh yeah.
Sexual chocolate.
Watch Mae Young give birth to a hand.
Well, yeah. Watch that.
Watch him have an encounter with a tranny.
Yep.
Oh God, I forgot about that one.
Choppy the pee pee.
Oh yeah, yeah. Watch I choppy your pee pee.
Watch. You know what? I'm kind of contradicting myself, but watch Kai and Tai. You want to see blatant Japanese racism? Look at Kai and Tai, even though I thoroughly enjoyed Kai and Tai, because you had Shane McMahon and The Undertaker voice Takemichi Noku and Funaki.
Watch.
Which was hilarious. They come out and they say Japanese, but it was overdubbed to make fun of the bad Japanese English dub movies.
Watch the Gang Wars storyline they did.
Watch DX come out with X-Pac in total blackface.
That was kind of funny, though.
That whole segment was very entertaining, but you could not do today what you did in the Attitude Era, because WWE would be dumped by USA in a heartbeat.
No, I mean, even something like, and I thought this was one of the most entertaining parts of the Attitude Era, was the Nation of Domination.
Oh, yeah.
And that was one of the best parts. They kind of wanted to do that with the New Day, with like Xavier Woods, Kofi.
They absolutely did.
beginning, if you notice, in the first time they ever met, like Xavier was like, you know, we've always been giving and trying to see you give. Oh, we no longer give, we take. And then they were off the air for like 2 months, and then they came back as New Day and Power Positivity and all that shit. They wanted to go that way, but I think that was when the Michael Brown shooting had just originally happened.
And they're like,
I believe so.
And so then they decided, no, let's.
I mean, they had a perfect opportunity to have the New Day be like a Black Lives Matter stable.
I thought that would have been a way to go with it, but I mean, the fact of the matter is that WWE is a different company now. It's a publicly traded company. They have shareholders and stockholders, and they can't. Like, people always complain, well, PG sucks. They got to go another than PG.
But it's not PG. It's not the fact that it's PG. It's the fact that they're not doing a good job of writing it.
It's right, exactly. It's the fact that if you're not liking it, it's not because it's PG. Because, listen, I hate to tell you, most of your other independent shows out there are basically PG. WCPW, outside of, like, one or two curses from Alberto Del Rio, is a PG show.
Yeah.
Ring of Honor, for the most part, is a PG show.
I always find it laughable when someone whose Twitter bio includes Chikara fan mocks the fact that WWE is PG.
Exactly. That's it. Chikara's whole basis is it's family-friendly wrestling. You know
and
what I mean?
They're more so than WWE currently is. They don't have any problems.
You know what I mean? So, I mean, to me, that's the thing, is that people want to go back to that attitude era and how crazy it was. And in today's world, in the world of the internet, in the world of instant reactions and, you know, so many different social justice causes and feminists and SJWs and all of that, you think for a second that you're going to be able to do 1/10 millionth of a thing you were going to, you know, that they got away with during the Attitude Era? Triple H basically fucking a corpse? It's not going to happen.
And
that's not happening.
And let's be honest. All these dudes complaining about wanting the Attitude Era back is the reason why someone like a Kevin Owens, who at that point was a main eventer on Raw, has the legs cut from under them in 2 minutes in a match with Goldberg. Why someone like a CM Punk has his world title reign ended by a part-timer.
Yeah.
Because everyone who's like, oh my God, I want the Attitude Era back. What the fuck, man? Well, they're going to start brain stars from the Attitude Era, and it's going to be at the expense of the guys they should be building up as stars.
And that's the thing. They want that back, and then it's like, well, I don't like part-timers, and then it's like, oh, well, where's Brock? Where's all that? But meanwhile, the moment, the mere mention of Brock's name, and everybody's dicks get hard, and they're up there cheering, oh my God, Brock and Joe, this is such a dream match. Meanwhile, 2 seconds ago, you're saying, well, Brock Lesnar's champion. This is what a joke. Where's the belt? But you Nakamura. Oh, my God, this is the greatest thing of ever. Oh, my God. Yeah,
so what you're saying is wrestling fans are never consistent with their complaining. In other news, the sky comes out every day.
But this thing, like, I think a lot of fans need to let go of the Attitude Era. Let the Attitude Era be what it was. You're asking for a bad remake of something you liked back when you were a teenager. And then if they do that again, you're going to hate it because you're older now and you're going to realize, hey, maybe I don't like this as much now as an adult than I did as a teenager.
I got to be honest with you. Or you can just look on YouTube. If you don't have the network, you can watch every big moment on YouTube and watch it free while independent podcasters get flagged for mentioning Samoa Joe and Brock Lesnar.
# salty hammy.
Hey, anyhow, salt always goes well with ham.
It certainly does. It certainly does. I never put that together until now. Oh, that's brilliant.
So, and that's my biggest complaint. Like, they're not making stars because they're too busy appeasing the idiots who say they want the Attitude Era back.
But they never listen to the fans.
Yeah. They're just listening to the ones who are vocal about wanting a period where Vince McMahon made a ton of money back.
So let's take that. Let's take something that fans really wanted.
Okay.
And WWE delivers. WWE fans and fans all over wanted Braun Strowman back. We were craving Braun Strowman on our TVs. And what happened on this past week's Raw was Roman Reigns was facing Samoa Joe in a great match, I might add. I mean, Roman Reigns, whether you like him or not, he's severely underrated. Hot take, I like Roman Reigns.
That whole argument of, Roman can't wrestle. He absolutely can. Bullshit. You may not like his character, and I can understand that, and I can agree with that 100%. But to sit there and say the man can't wrestle, You know,
you're out of your fucking mind.
I'll be honest. Roman Reigns is a better wrestler than the guy who won the Money in the Bank contract.
He certainly is.
And not as many people are complaining about him winning the contract. So, yes, it is a little hypocritical that people are giving Reigns shit. And I've always said, like, with Reigns, I put him up there with his, at, like, his best right now. He's a Cena or an Orton.
Yeah.
He can't carry a match, but he can be in a great match.
He can work great with the right opponent. So, this past week on Raw, Roman Reigns and Samoa Joe were going at it in a great, great match.
It's a really good match.
And then you see the sound of an ambulance beeping in the back of the arena. Roman looks confused. The ambulance backs up, and sure enough, the person who comes out of this ambulance is indeed one Braun Strowman. And the pop.
Oh, my God!
That pop, guys, is just...
Listen to that.
That is a pop worth repeating, and that is a pop worth mentioning. Dear WWE, book Braun Strowman the right way. And then, of course, Samoa Joe seizing the opportunity, choking out Roman Reigns. Roman Reigns loses clean. And to all of you people who say Roman Reigns never loses clean, look at Seth Rollins at Money in the Bank last year. Look at Bray Wyatt. Roman Reigns has lost both
Finn
on
Balor.
Yes, Roman Reigns has lost clean to many people on many occasions, both on pay-per-view and free TV. Roman Reigns does lose when it makes the most sense. WWE are building him up to be the next it guy, so he cannot lose all the time. He has to lose in the right circumstances.
The stat is, and the stat that I saw now, you got to take everything, you know, all the other matches out of it, but in straight one-on-one matches, this was only the second time he's lost clean. And here's the thing. Do you even count this as clean? I don't count
it as clean. There was interference from a video.
He was distracted by Braun Strowman. Right.
To me, I don't even see that as a clean loss, you know? And, you know, again, I don't know if I saw the purpose of that match other than maybe to introduce Braun. I think you could have introduced Braun when
he
came out and did his, you know, this is what I'm going to do at SummerSlam. I'm the number one contender. I think you could have had him come out. I'm not 100% sure that we needed that match, and it was kind of it is what it is. But I mean, Roman looked fine. Joe looked great, and again, his cocaine clutch looks amazing.
Cocaine clutch. I love that name that we gave.
I'm wondering if they're after the whole Brock and Joe feud is over, if they're gonna try to do like a whole. Like a Samoan thing between, like a Samoan program between Joe and Reigns. It's kind of like how Reigns is like the chosen Samoan. He's part of the royal family of Samoans, the Inouyes and everything like that. And how Samoa Joe, like Paul Heyman, is, you know, been kind of laying the hints with is, you know, he's the outsider. He's the Samoan that the Samoans don't want to talk about, you know. So I wonder if they're kind of maybe going to do a program like that leading up to, like, you know, Survivor Series or even the Rumble.
I'll be honest. I've been liking the build for Joe Lesnar so much. I think they should do two matches. One at Great Balls of Fire.
Great name.
And one at SummerSlam. And push the Braun match back to SummerSlam, to Survivor Series.
I'm going to stop saying it. I'm just going to start calling it G-Boff.
Fair enough.
I just don't want to say Great Balls of Fire anymore. Because
great name.
G-Boff sounds less stupid than Great Balls of Fire.
Great name.
St. Valentine's Day Massacre was a better pay-per-view name.
It certainly is.
December to Dismember. Oh, Jesus.
Oh, boy.
Oh, God.
A.K.A. what drove Paul Heyman completely insane. One final highlight from this week's WWE TV programs is Enzo Amore is a mystery attacker revealed, and we, mystery attacker. I'm throwing the air quotes out there. Mystery attacker. We all knew it was Big Cass, so we knew that this team was splitting. My question to you guys is, have they pulled the trigger too quickly with Enzo and Cass? Should they have gotten at least one tag team title run?
Okay, here's the way I'm going to look at it.
Two-part, by the way. Second part, how does Cass's heel turn, how do you feel about that, and how do you rank his heel promo that he gave Enzo?
So, my thought is, I think they were not given the tag titles on purpose. And this might be the one time where they successfully did long-term story building that didn't involve Jericho and Owens. If you think about it, when they were, they didn't win the tag titles in NXT. Like, they were getting momentum, but they never won those titles. Fucking Blake and Murphy, a team that's not together anymore, and we're one of those, the one who's not engaged to Alexa Bliss will probably be cut
Blake
soon.
And Mr. Bliss, you mean?
All right, relax, Mike Kanellis.
Listen, if I had the chance, I would take her last name in a goddamn heartbeat. You better believe that.
Believe that.
Believe that.
Believe that.
I honestly think that they were... He's doing the Roman Reigns thing. So, I honestly think the memo came down. Listen, we're going to call these guys up as a tag team. Do not let them win the NXT tag titles.
Here's the thing. I don't think it went that far. I think it got to a point where, you know, they were kind of going with that that team that struggled to win the titles, could never win the big one kind of angle in NXT. Then they got so big that it was, you know, okay, we're going to bring them up. So they just never got that opportunity to maybe finish that in NXT. And then once they got up, they got that number one contendership match, and then Enzo went and concussed himself scarily. You know, I'll never forget watching that. That's scary. I thought he was dead.
Yeah, he was out. The UFC knockout.
So that sidelined them there for a bit. And then I think it was after that that they started formulating, hey, listen, let's just make it like to where they get close and they do think, but they're never there. And you know, like they'll beat the club, but then they'll lose the New Day, or they'll win in a non-title match, and then they'll get the title match, but they'll lose the title match, and you know, like all these different things, and just to the point where you start figuring, like, man, are these guys ever going to win a title? And it's got to be frustrating. And you start thinking about that in general.
And then, sorry,
no, go right ahead.
And then you do the Rusev thing, where, like, let's face it, it's Enzo's fault that Cass got involved in that situation, and more situations that Enzo's right, like, starting the situation, and Cass is having to finish the situation.
Right, and I think that I honestly think they pulled the trigger too early? No, I think this was almost the plan, almost the start. I think this was the idea from the start. I think they milked as much as they could merchandise-wise out of him. You know, with the goofy hair headband that they had and all the different shirts and all the, you know, everything like that. I think they got as much merch as they could out of them before they did it, which is why it's taken a year and a half. But I agree with Mike. I think it was good long-term storytelling. I think the trigger was pulled right. And just to quickly point out your second part of the question, I think it was a good promo. I think it was good. I think it was on point. I think it came across as real. It came across as, you know, it was kind of obvious. Yeah, he did it. Yeah, well, so this kind of stuff. I'm not sure if I agreed how they did the buildup and showing the footage with Corey Graves and everything. That was kind of, that seemed a little weird to me. And kind of having everybody come out and then eliminating them one by one, that you're not the one and you're not the one. And, you know, Big Show for saying, you know me, Kurt, you know I would never do something like this. It's like, bullshit, you wake up, and within the first half hour, you turn heel and face seven times, show. Come
you
on.
Took Rey Mysterio on a stretcher and smacked him into the ring post. And
let's not joke each other here, show, okay? But I think once we got to the Kaz promo portion, he's like, you're goddamn right I did it, and he gave his reasons, and just that point where he says, your mouth writes checks, your ass can't cash.
It was brilliant.
That right there is kind of where it was just like, you know, I wanted to see, the reason I did all this was to see how, you know, if you were as dumb as you look, and the truth is you're even dumber. And it's just, as somebody who's kind of, you know, anybody who's had a friend or a friendship that's kind of, you know, broken up kind of in that way, where it's been either, you know, there was some kind of frustration between friends or something like that, but I've had that moment where it was just kind of like, you maybe didn't see that coming. I mean, poor Enzo's face, man. I mean, it was even worse than Jericho's face when he sold
Enzo
the whip.
Sold that brilliantly.
Yeah.
But bro,
my only worry now with this is, what's next for Enzo?
He'll do a short feud with Cass, and he'll either go to the cruiserweight division or...
See, you kind of just took it right... You honestly just took my idea right from me, Mike.
Or, yeah, I was going to say, or he becomes basically the replacement for Santino.
In which case, I feel bad for Enzo. I mean, I think he could go to 205 Live. I mean, he certainly has the best mic skills of anybody that would be there.
Hey, even though
I think Neville is the far superior wrestler, I think Enzo could brighten up the 205 division.
He could be a name for this show. He might not be a name that will draw people to Raw, but he'd be a name that would draw people to 205 Live. We make fun of Santino, but you know what? Santino was employed for a good goddamn long time, and they chose him over Jim Cornette when Cornette slapped him.
Right, and here's the thing, and Enzo might have, I mean, and that's it. I think Enzo will have a long career. He'll be, he's going to be well compensated. He's going to have a good, you know, okay. I mean, he's going to be paid well. I think, you know, his mic skills alone and his entertainment value means that he's going to be employed no matter where they put him, whether it is 205 Live or they find something else to do with him. But, I mean, for all intents and purposes, let's be serious, he's a mid-carder. He's a mid-carder at best alone. Do I think Kaz will succeed, you know, if he gets a rocket strapped to him and gets a big push? I don't know that either.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not sure. Again, I'd have to see Kaz. But in the one or two times where Kaz has been by himself, you know, when they kind of did that Fatal 5-Way on Raw last year with everybody, and he kind of dropped a little pipe bomb on Seth Rollins, you know, himself, where he's talking about, you know, unlike you, size really does matter. And it's kind of like, oh, shit. You know, I mean, I think he has.
Wait, hold on. Can you do that again?
Oh, shit.
All right. Isolate that.
There you go. But I want that as my ringtone. That's pretty decent. But seriously, like, you know, I think Kaz has that ability if given the opportunity. I think he has that ability. He has the size. He's got to, you know, again, Vince loves big sweaty men. We know that. He has to work a little bit more in the ring execution. But I mean, I think he has the ability. Will he be a top guy? I don't know. But he has that ability. Enzo is never going to be a main eventer. I think we understand that.
Yeah.
But no. Enzo can be at the very top of his game, and he can make a career, obviously, out of being in a WWE. He can build a lot of stuff. Is he ever going to be in the Hall of Fame? No. Is he ever going to win a world championship? Maybe outside of the cruiserweight, maybe not. But, I mean, I can see him having a successful mid-card, lower mid-card, maybe at the best an upper mid-card career. Like, I would say this. I would say the best Enzo I think could ever hope for is either a U.S. title run or a Intercontinental title run. And that's if he's lucky. If he's lucky, he can maybe get one.
I completely agree.
Let's not forget, though, as far as Hall of Fame, Abdullah the Butcher's in their Hall of Fame.
Yeah, but Abdullah gave up most of his scalp for the business. So Abdullah deserves to be there.
He's
son of a bitch.
He also shared a lot of hepatitis, but...
Yes, he did. He shared a lot of hepatitis, more than some of the Attitude Era girls.
By the way, let's close the show with this. Earlier in the program, we talked about Jim Cornette and how Vince Russo filed a restraining order against him. This tweet just came from Eric Bischoff. I rest my case. You know what? I'm following Eric Bischoff. Yeah, about that.
I don't know.
Just got to follow.
It's weird that Bischoff.
From a fat man in New Jersey.
It's weird that
Bischoff. Count yourself lucky, Bischoff.
That's right.
Yeah. It's weird that Bischoff and Cornette are now buddies because they both hate Russo that much.
A greater evil has united at former enemies.
The enemy of my enemy is my friend. I mean, that's like Sun Tzu shit there, man. That's like Art of War. That's just, you know. A hatred can bring people together.
God, I love how angry Jim Cornette is.
I
motivate myself to be as hilarious when I'm as angry as Jim Cornette is. I get that angry, I just come off as angry. Jim Cornette gets that angry, he comes off as a fucking comic genius.
Oh, God. Did you guys hear his rant about him telling Russo to meet him? to fight, and then he'll bring $5,000 because Russo doesn't have a job.
That's fucking Jim Cornette is just epic.
After the show, Hammy, we'll find the link and play it because it's fantastic.
Honestly, what you should do if you haven't so far, Hammy, is go onto YouTube, as much as you may not like them, but go onto YouTube and find all the shoot interviews and the kayfabe commentaries that you can on him and just play that in a playlist and just play that all day long. You will not be disappointed.
So what you're saying is I shouldn't file a copyright case then?
No.
Because
because they don't really show any, you know, there's nothing to file a copyright case. No, just drop it and let it go, man.
Salty ham. #SaltyHam.
Before you put the ham in the oven, you just
with it.
Sprinkle some salt on the ham.
Deal. Everybody who's on YouTube knows the deal. We know. We get it. Take a breath.
I'm like that Salty Bay meme with just my bitterness towards YouTube. All right.
Just all sprinkling the YouTube logo.
Yes! Please, someone Photoshop my face on the Salt Bay guy with YouTube logo.
I'm on it.
That'll be my new default photo tomorrow. All right, guys. That is our show. Fun show tonight. Kind of went off the rails a little bit here and there, but you know what? That's what we do. That is what we love talking wrestling. We love talking to you guys about wrestling. What, Kane?
It was a fun conversation.
Yeah, it was a fun show. Very fun show. I am at Ham's Group on Twitter. He is at Michael R. Falcone on Twitter. He is at Kane on the Air on Twitter. Follow him. Follow Punchy. Follow me. Follow the show at Calf Crusher Pod on Twitter. We will see you next week. Same bat time, same bat network. Have a wonderful weekend.